Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
War-torn. What imagery comes to mind when you hear that phrase, war-torn? Stuff you read in a newspaper story, stuff you read in a magazine, war-torn. That really can't explain what they went through when their lives were torn up, when their worlds were torn up by war, by the Germans, by the Italians, by the communists, by starvation, by famine, by sins piled upon sins, by blood, because there is a cost to all that blood, and it's in your soul that you pay for it. So when you listen to this, think of the devastation of war, but also the man who was looking for a better day, who was optimistic, a family trying to grab on to this new soil of ours in America. You could hear it sometimes in my father's voice. Don't imagine him like as some sort of Greek George M. Cohan dancing away like Jimmy Cagney, Uncle Sam. He wasn't that type of dancer. He didn't wear stars and stripes. He wasn't spangly. He was not a showman, but the light inside him when he talked about America, when he talked about the love for this country, when he talked about freedom, the freedom all of you can have in this wonderful country of ours. That's what I hear when I hear my father's voice coming back. He's been gone a long time now. He stubbornly tried to drive himself to the hospital having a heart attack, and he didn't make it. And we thought we lost the tapes, and we found the tapes, and then Jeff Carlin, WGN producer, my friend and co-host here on the Chicago Way podcast, polished them up. And in that polish, there's some rough quality there that doesn't need polish. It's the man's love of America. A lot of us, maybe we don't love it as much or as they did, or maybe we step aside from it, step away from it. It's too bright for us. But for the immigrants who are desperate to be free and safe, this is the Palikari Project. This is my father's story in his own words. Produced by Jeff Carlin of WGN Radio. I'm John Cass, editor-in-chief of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of common sense. And he had it. Part 3 on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
Hello again there, Chicago Way listeners. Thank you so much for listening to the Palikari Project, a real passion project here of the Chicago Way. I invite you to listen to parts 1 and 2 if you've missed those. There's a lot of really interesting stuff in there. And of course, please share, like, review, tell your friends, that sort of thing, because I think this is an important story that is both unique to the Cass family and universal to many families. And before we hand things off to our hero, I wanted to give you a couple of quick asides before things get rolling. Spiros here will mention the word tagma, which if you speak Greek, you probably know what that means, but I don't. So I had to look it up, and it's actually a word that is used to define like units within the military, like a battalion, so to speak. So when he mentions that, that's what he's referring to. And he also tells us a horrific story about a slaughter of innocent civilians by the thousands at a lake outside Athens that was built by the French. He called it a lake for water. It was kind of a reservoir. It's called Lake Marathon. If you wanted to look that up, it's a terrible story. And I can't imagine witnessing it firsthand like Spiros did. It's just unfathomable in my mind. Espiros also takes us to a place called the White House in Athens, and Espiros was trying to get there to defend his country, to answer the call to fight the communists. And in doing so, he encounters stiff resistance, including being shot at, in which he refers to the sparkles, which is sparks from gunfire. So when you hear him say sparkles, he means sparks flying from bullets hitting the ground. And so as we rejoin our hero, he's talking about life after the Germans have left, but the communists are starting to take control, and the Greek government in exile is struggling to keep them at bay.
It's before the, or rather a year before the Germans left Greece, I had three enemies. Germans, first Italians, and the worst ones was the communists, the Greek communists, who they want to take over Greece and lose again our freedom for years, years to come, like Nicaraguans, like Afghanistans, Cambodians. Like those people. And I couldn't accept that, to be slave to my own people. The guerrillas were so strong, the communist guerrillas, because they took a lot of kids up in the mountains by killing one German, and the Germans went after the youngsters. And the youngsters left. They went up, and now they're in the communist hands. They have to be a communist too. Not real communist, but just to help them to be in their group. And that's why I decide to go against them, fight them, until they kill me. And we make a group of anti-communist group before yet the Germans left. Because to fight our main enemy now, because we knew the Germans gonna live someday. We knew they losing the war. Even before they didn't lose the war, we knew they were going to start losing the war. And now we try for tomorrow what might be happening. And I decide to be in the group against the guerrillas, against the communist guerrillas. Well, until November 1944, our government from Africa told us the groups against the communists to drop the guns, not to fight them, and to come back. The guerrilla, the communists is not going to bother us. And we thought he might have a power at that time and tell the guerrillas to step down. Well, they didn't have the power, because no help from any place. We dropped the guns, and a few days later, I was in Tripoli at the time, a little a city 6 miles away from my hometown. A friend I had in Albania, very good friend, which he was bringing me food, rice or a little quarter pound rice, quarter pound noodles in the first line. He was a cook for a Tagma. Now he's a general. His name was Moulopoulos, Tatis Moulopoulos, a good, good friend. He saw me in Tripoli. He asked my sister Tula, where I am, where I'm hiding. And my sister knew he's a good friend of mine. He never going to hurt me. He told him. And here I see a few guys walking and one guy in the horse. They came to the house. I lived for a while there. And I was terrified at the time. I thought that's my last second. They came for me to pick me up. But was Takis Moulopoulos, my friend. And he came in the house, he hugged me, he kissed me, and he was happy to see me alive because he knew I was on the other side. I was not on his side. But he was a good friend. And he asked me, what do I want from him? And I said, I don't want anything else, just I want to go to Rizes, to my hometown. He says, don't worry about Rizes. I went already in your hometown, and I went to your house, and I find your mother, and I gave her a letter, which the letter says, nobody gonna touch this house. And my mother used to have the letter in her pocket. Any gorilla came, any communist gorilla came to my house to ask for things or take things away, blankets or anything they need, my mother showed them the letter and his signature, and then they quit. They left. They left my house alone because of him. Now I ask him, I want to go to the village. He says, you go to the village and don't be afraid. He says, already I have you covered. Nobody going to bother you. And then I went to a place with him together to get a paper, like a recall passport, like Taftotida, to allow me to go out in my village. And he asked a guy who was sitting on the desk, give Spiro Taftotida a paper, you're going to Rizes. And he says, what's your name? And I said, Spiro Talaganis. He says, Talaganis? Because his name was Talaganis. He was my cousin, distant cousin, maybe third cousins, because I said before, my grandpa came from his town and he left there two, three brothers. And my grandpa came to Rizes. And then we were about third cousins. And when I said Talaganis, he says, Talaganis, from where? I said, from Doriza. My grandpa was from there. And my name is Kasidogenis now, I said. It's not Talaganis. My grandpa changed his name. And we are cousins, I told him. And he says, now you make me a cousin or you were before. I didn't say anything. And my friend jumped in it and says, leave those things on the side. Just give him the paper, I told you. And he gave me the paper. I went to the village. And then a few days later, I heard things. They're going to take us away. They might be punish us. All those guys, we went to the against them. And I decided to leave my hometown. I left my hometown, hiding in a big truck behind, and I went to Athens. I thought Athens is a big city, nobody knows me there. We'll see what happened. up to where the government comes back and gives orders then. We were hoping our Greek government going to come from Africa and start giving orders instead to take orders. But that never happens that time. And the guerrillas start fighting the police, the government police in Athens, and start killing police or anybody who was against them. Later on, with my own eyes, I saw 3,000 people cut their necks and girls cut the breast in a place we call them Ulan. Was a French company. They make the lake for Athens to get the water from there. They didn't drop him in the water. They had him outside. It was a thing you never want to see again. Now, what am I going to do? I'm alone in Athens. I know few people, not too many. And I heard in the Anaktora, which is a White House like United States, they take secret people. They take them there to fight against the guerrilla, against the communist guerrillas. And one day I decide to go. They stopped me on the way a few times, guerrilla groups, and they asked me where I'm going. And I said, a friend of mine, I use my friend's name again, just to save my neck, probably. I said, my friend, Takis Moulopoulos, he's a wounded outside of the palace. Oh yeah? Moulopoulos' name was very known to anybody, to all the guerrillas, almost probably. And then they allowed me to go. Another group stopped me, I said the same story. Two, three groups stopped me, I said the same story. And finally I make it outside of the palace. Now, how can I go to the palace? The guns were shooting all over around the palace. In the palace was very few, maybe few Greeks and some English people, English soldiers. 6,000 was. But they were not all in Athens, only in the palace.
Tanks,
yeah. They had some tanks around, and they were shooting, and the guerrillas all around, they were shooting toward the White House, or anybody go that way. Special.
Explain that over. Now you pass through, and you see now you get to the palace.
No, I didn't get to the palace.
I was
in the corner of the Grand Britannia.
Now, you're in the hotel. Explain what it looks like
the palace,
and how open it is.
Yeah,
wait, just start from the beginning and say, so they let me...
They let me go, and I went right in the corner. One of the corners was a Grand Britannia. That's a hotel named Grand Britannia. But all around the White House is a lots of empty space, maybe 200-300 feet, maybe more, from the White House to the corner I was. But there is no other closer place. Others might be, other corners are more distant. And now, how can I go from Grand Britannia corner to the palace? I knew what to do, but I knew the minute I'm going to start moving toward there, they're going to shoot me all over. And I stood there maybe 1 hour thinking how to do it. That hour probably was more than 10 years of my life, longer than 10 years of my life. I thought it was one eonas, 10 years. What's the limit on eona?
Decade.
Sitting there probably was 1 hour, 2 hours, something like that. But I thought it was so long. Probably I decided it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There was no other way. Give me my cigarette, something. No other way. I cannot go back where I was. I have to do it. And I put my head down. Something sparked me. Sparkle, and I took off. I took off, I didn't look left or right or back. Just I was moving in the core, in the straight, little, not straight line. I was going a little back and forth, I mean, side and this and that. And I reached, finally, I reached close to the, White House, to the palace. In a little corner was a little bush, and I had more than over 100 shots on me. They were hitting on the pavement of the street, and the sparkles that came down right in my legs, they passed by me, but thanks God, no one had my name. Well, I got to the little bush, I fell right on the side of the bush. I thought it was more cover, but no, it was not real cover. They shot me from the other side. And I felt some bullets came under my belly. And I stopped there. I don't know if I was breathing or not. I don't know if I was real dead or alive. I couldn't feel the pains or anything. No pains, probably I thought I'm alive. And I stayed there another half hour maybe, trying to find something, say they think I'm dead here. And they turned their guns. Instead to watch me, they turned the other way. But a half hour, I didn't move a thing, standing there like dead. And I got up, and I ran again, another maybe 100, 150 yards to the White House. The White House is all with a steel fence all around, and I had to find the door. Probably I find the door, I got in. When I got in, I find inside, I passed by the English soldiers, and inside was about 100 Greek people, soldiers already dressed. Right away they took my name. They asked me what I was, what I'm doing, and why I came here for. I told my story. In 5 minutes I was dressed already. You know, and I was right in the outside line. About two, three days later, hundreds of people starting moving in the palace, asked to be dressed, to be soldiers, volunteers now, because the English planes, they throw leaflets all over Athens, and they say, all the patriotes, patriots, they want to save Greece, they better come and get dressed. We're going to fight the communists. And then I got 5-6 days later, there was about maybe 10,000 people in and out in the Greens, in the Proavio, the men already with the guns and everything. And they divide us because the White House couldn't hold anymore. They took a group of us, maybe, I don't know how many, 1,000 or something like that. They took us a little farther down in the club of officers' club. And we stayed there for 1 day, and the next day we started going out to fighting. We're going toward Likavetos, or rather we came from up to the side of Likavetos, we went up to the Likavetos, which is a little hill right in the middle of Athens. Now Acropolis was that time, the way we went was little on my right side, was fighting there because another Greek group, Greek army, went to fight Acropolis. The communists, they have already dig down in Acropolis, but they fought him and they won, the Greek people, the Greek army. And now we start firing from Likavetos down, house to house. And a few days later, or 10 days later, after vicious firing on the streets, because the guerrillas, the communist guerrillas, they make holes from one side, they tear down the houses on the bottom, from one house to the other. You have to take the street. They have to take the street from one hole around to the other, you know, and go around. They had all like rats. They had all the houses, all the buildings, make holes from one to the other, through the basements, through here and there. Anyway, it was January 3, when a communist guy, gorilla, went on the other side of the street with a...
Megaphone.
What?
Megaphone.
Megaphone, with a megaphone, says, brothers, we are leaving Athens. We're going to wait for the anti-communist people to come outside of Athens. We fight there. We fight them there. You drop the guns and come with us, or take the guns with you and come to us to fight the Englishmen, and everybody wants to stay on the other side. And they left January 3rd, went out of Athens. That was then my freedom. I felt free, like eagle, like bird. I was very, very happy, you know. And then we went a month later, I think, or a month and a half, we went to Thessalonica and North Greece. Thessalonica and then Drama and Kavala, which are two good cities a little north of Thessalonica. And I stayed there from 1955 to 1945, yeah, to 1949 almost. They kept me so long. But the freedom was there. When we went up to the North Greece, you heard or you know, or the Christ was walking with a donkey toward where the time when the people put the palm on the streets for him to go. The North Greeks, the time, they filled the streets with the flowers. It was about April, I think, when I went, when millions and millions and millions of flowers, they throw it on the cars and the trucks, and the street was all flowers you walking through. And then after I finish my army, I went back to the village and I look around. It was already 4 years passed by, 4 and a half years at the time. I went back to the village and I look around. The people yet was very much hurt from the war. And I said at the time, I'm going to leave Greece. I can't take it. Another occupation or another stupid gorilla communist occupation. I cannot take it. I cannot. I'm too hurt. I'm 10 years almost in service. I want to leave. I had three choices. Canada, Australia, my friends went there, and the United States. I decided to come to the United States, a powerful country. I didn't ask the time for anything else, just to be free, and nobody can walk through our country or the walk through the necrotafia, which is a cemetery with our dead people there. They're walking through, even with the horses, with anything. And I decide, because my sisters were here in the United States, American-born people, and I decide to come here where my sisters are and be free in the nice country and strong country.
Hello again, listeners. Quick aside here. Spiros talks about working at the Chicago Hilton. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, when it was built in the 30s, it was this crown jewel of the Hilton family empire. It was state of the art. It had everything: indoor swimming pools and weight rooms and spas and tennis courts and an ice dancing floor within one of its ballrooms, which could be covered with wood for dinners and taken up to allow the presentation. And while working as a busboy, Spiros was asked by a diner how the floor functions, and she wasn't connected. How you doing? She was asking literally about the magic of the state-of-the-art floor at the Chicago Hilton.
Now, when I came here, United States, I find a most wonderful people. For instance, a few days later, I went, somebody asked, told me to go and ask for a job on the Hilton Hotel in Chicago, in our town, for busboy. And I knew yes and no, and not too much, very few words. Anyway, I went there, and I find the head waiter. His name was Philita, and I asked him, I want a job, talking to him in Greek, because he was Greek. And the only thing he asked me, he looked at me well, and he asked me, Malonis? That means, are you fighting with the people? Are you mean person? I said, no, Phil, I'm not a mean person. I'm going to do the best job you ask me. And he says, come back tomorrow. And I went back tomorrow, the next day, and he says, go downstairs, you get a little sleep, go get you things and get dressed. I dressed, I came up here in the room. I didn't know what to do. Not at all. And he called somebody, Philita, my boss, called another Greek guy, says, help Spiro. What to do? Show him around. He took me to the kitchen, here's the forks, here's the knives, and look what they're doing. That didn't take me too long to understand what I supposed to, how to set up the tables. Now I start working the same day. My shoes in 1 hour, because I was so nervous to do well, were so wet. I perspired in my feet so much. I touched the leather of my shoes. It was soaked like you had it for a few days in the water. It was so bad. A few days later, they told me, you gotta have 2-3 pairs of shoes in there, because if you perspire, you're gonna get crippled. Your feet gonna break. And my feet broke in pieces. All my toe, my feet figures, I call it that type, was broken and bleeding. And I told one captain at the time, I said, I cannot walk. I'm a cripple. I cannot walk. My toe and my feet figures are all broken. They're bleeding. Oh, he says, oh, laziness? And I said, no. All right. I left him. I went to the head waiter. And I said, Phil, my feet, I'm too nervous. I want to do well. And my feet cut in pieces. Do you want to see it? It's all split, open. They're bleeding. He says, yeah. When I tried to take my shoe out, he says, no, no, okay, stay home one day. I stay home one day, and my sisters gave me some kind of medicine here and there. I tied them, I went back to work, and I bought another pair of shoes. And after that, I was all right. In 2 years, I think, my boss made me waiter. I knew few words. In the beginning, I didn't know anything. For instance, a lady asked me about how the floor operates, because we had a dance floor, and the floor disappeared, was ice come up, and they had the ice show at the time. And I thought, yes, she asked me for the washrooms. And I told her to go outside to your right, a few steps down to your right. And she would start laughing like hell. And I thought, oh my God, what I said. Probably I said bad words. I don't know what I said now. Because they told me to say that if somebody asked me for the washroom. But she didn't ask me for the washroom. And then she went to my boss and told him what I said. He was laughing, and he came down, find me, and he says, "Goofy, what you told the lady?" I said, "Phil, what? I don't know what I said. I said something." He says, "You know, she asked you for the washroom." I said, "No, she asked you how the floor operates." Anyway, it was so embarrassing. And another thing happens to me the first day when I came from Greece, because I was hurt that time. I was 32 years old when I came. And, new country, I have to stay here, to live here, and I'm so helpless. I have nothing. The language is a very big thing. Because I took the bus, I went to a Greek town to buy a few things and coming back, because I took some buses in Athens. From the bus stop, the driver from the front opens all the doors and you get out. But this bus did not open the doors, and I was waiting for the door to open, and everybody was saying something to me, and I didn't know what they were saying. And finally the driver called me, he says, "Come here," and I went through the front door, and I came home very disappointed, and I told my sisters what happened. And they said, "You know what they told you? The people will scream at you." "What?" "Step down." And after that, I started getting more disappointed, not for the country, not for the United States, for myself. What am I going to do now? I'm here to stay. I'm here to make a living. And I cannot keep off the bus. You know, that's a very big... It's not like you go vacation and you don't care. That's vacation. In 10 days, 20 days, you go. You're a vacation here. That's different. But when you come here to stay, to live, and you came through so much war, that disappointment was great. Anyway, I started learning a few words. I tried to go to school. I went one day or two because I find this little job, busboy. My family needs help, my sisters in the old country, and my mother and father, they need help from me now. And I had to go to work to find a job, even 100 hours a week if I could find it. You know, 2, 3, 4 jobs, no matter how many, if I could do it. Anyway, I became a captain. No, I became a... They make me waiter. I knew some words. But the American people is so good. As long as you do what you're supposed to do, you serve the people. You're not there to talk to them about politics. You're there to give them what they're asking. They want the food, they want the drinks, they want clean table, they want clean ashtrays, which I was doing that. The only thing, I could speak for Mr. Deli or anybody else, you know. Anyway, the last few years, I was a captain in the room. But working for somebody, I thought, that's enough. It's not, I was making good living, but not enough to do anything. My dreams coming alive again. What I had before I go to the army. come alive and tell me, don't spend your time for nothing in here. Do something. What are you going to do? You know a little bit about food. Why don't open up a restaurant? How can I open the restaurant? I had my brother was here, George. I took my brother in the job. We were both working there. I had $1,500. And George had $1,500. And now we ask my brother-in-law, they offer to me, offer us to give us money to do something. They thought we're looking for a restaurant. We look for restaurants, but the restaurants with more than 15 chairs were very expensive for us. We didn't have the money. And a fellow we knew, he says, why don't go and look at the grocery store in that place, 55th California. I was there, I said to him, well, I don't know anything about groceries. I know about how to serve people or about food a little bit. He says, well, I go and look at the grocery store anyway. I went, I looked at the grocery store, what, nothing, I don't know anything. And my brother-in-law, they said, why don't you take the grocery store? As long as not too much money, we help you. They help us to make $10,000, and we borrow money from a once a company. They serve us a milk, another $10,000, and was enough to open up the little grocery store, take over. We took the grocery store. Now we open up 8 o'clock. We closing 8 o'clock from morning. Tonight, 8 o'clock, we are 6 o'clock there. Put the groceries on the shelves. And now the store opens 8 o'clock. We stay up to 10 o'clock after 2 hours closing time to mop the floors. Mop the floor, clean the windows, and put the signs on the, and do the book work too. Good thing for us, the time my brother was a teacher in Greece, and I had pretty good in arithmetic, mathematics. I was pretty good when I was in school in Greece, and then we didn't have any difficulty to follow the books, to do the book work, whatever needs orders and those things. But when we got to the store, I did not know the soup, Campbell soup for dog food, the difference, you know, was so bad. After we got in, I thought, my God, here we are in something we have no idea. But the people, the American people again, they are so wonderful. John, I mean it. They are so wonderful. They help us. They saw us in the store. We were willing to work hard. And no matter if we know English or we don't, or if we know the business or we don't, as long as we don't cheat the customers, and we try to help them around the store. We try to give them the best service they ever had and thank them 10 times for one loaf of bread because they bought it in our store. And they were so wonderful. Customers, they used to shop in that store. Now they became our friends. And because we didn't know where's the soup? Where's the dog food? Where's the macaroni? The customers, they heard the other customer says, where's your dog food, for instance? And the customer says, I'll take you there. And they take the other customers there to show them where we are, our things are, because they didn't want us to get embarrassed, because we don't know where the dog food or the soup belongs to. But in 6 months, we learned so much. I don't think you can learn to work for somebody in 10 years. We knew how to order now. We knew everything. We knew little store. It was not too big, but it was a great for us. And from that time, now we start our business going better. And then, how many years later, a store was a jewel store across the street of ours, which Jules left it and somebody else bought it. He offered to us because he was going down. We decided to buy the store. We bought the store, Gage Park, and then from that store, we make a little more money, and we bought West Lawn, right, which we still have it. From those two stores, we sold the old one, we make a little money, and that helps to go to the other store. And now, we have only one store. And thanks God, my son Peter took over now, because I'm 71 years old now, and I cannot work anymore. And thanks God, my sons are wonderful. I have a daughter-in-law, her name is Barry Cash. I have John's working for the Tribune. Peter took over the business, and Nikki goes to the law school. Thanks God, I can help him to go to the school, all they went to the school. That was my pride, to be in school. And I find out something, as we said here, why Americans, a lot of Americans, do not understand that. Yeah. I got Barry. I forgot. I thought it was all mine. I got married. A girl from Canada. Her name was Barry Kefalas. Now it's a Barry Cash. And my brother got married. Mary, Captain, now is Mary Cash, and those two wives, they work in the store like anybody else when they had to work. They didn't allow to go talk at the back of the room or go 5-6 times at the back, no. They had to stay like anybody else in the front as long as they make a little money and stay. Those girls help us to get ahead, you know, and it was wonderful. And I want to say another thing. In Greece, those years back, anybody, a doctor or professional people, they never like to get mixed with the people they're not professional. But in this country, you know, I find things different. They're not embarrassed to tell you where they came from, first of all, from the small village in the mountains of Alabama, you know. I was born in that Missouri village up to the, nobody knows it. They are proud of it. Some Greeks at the time, everybody became from Athens, you know, which is a very bad thing. They denied their own place, birthplace. I didn't like that at all when I was in Greece. When I came here, even doctors or lawyers, my neighbors or lawyers and doctors, we drank together, we had parties, we play cards. It was no different. And I said, my God, what a country. What a Russian guy said, what a country. You know, the people, John, is a real wonderful people here, you know. We find people all over the place, you know, different people, different things, different minds. But the real American people are good people.
And before we go, I'd like to thank you again for listening to part 3 of the Policaria Project. It's been quite the passion project for us here at the Chicago Way. And I'd love if you'd share it with your friends, write a review, and give us a rating. It helps to get the word out, get the story out there. It's quite powerful, and I'm sure it resonates with many, many families. And I think this last story on part 3 of the Policaria Project will resonate with all of us. It really lays bare what it's like to come to a new world without anything and leave behind a world that had everything. And I think this last story on part 3 here of the Policaria Project really puts a button on what it is to fight for a world you've once... And I think this last story will resonate even... And I think this last story of Paul... And I think this last story... Keep it simple. And I think this last story... And I think this last story of on part 3 of the Policaria Project will resonate with all of us. It really lays bare what it's like to come to a new world without anything and leave behind a world that had everything. But more importantly, it's an exemplary of what Spiros went through to get here and why it was important for him to be here.
Wait a second. Okay, go ahead.
My big, not disappointment, I never expect the questions from the judge when I went to get my American citizen papers. The judge at the time asked me, besides other questions, was easy. He asked me, if United States go in the war against Greece, what you gonna do? I couldn't expect the question, and I got stung for a while, and I thought, my God, what I'm doing. I was in the war, from one war to the other, civil war, Albania, all those wars against the communism, and now I have to deny my country in case in war I have to go back and step on the graves of my parents and shoot my friends. I stopped for a while. And the judge was, look at me, right in my eyes. Come on, What's your opinion? What you going to do? He didn't say that, but he was looking at me. And I took a few seconds, and I said, my country, I was thinking those things. My country is free now. And we are friends with the United States. We're never going to go to the war against each other. I know that. I believe that. And on the other hand, I ask to leave Greece and go to another country, strong country like the United States. Where nobody can go through. And I told the judge, yes, I will. I'm going to fight against Greece because I knew that was a question ask everybody when they went for the American citizen papers. And I was thinking that time, he's my family, my own family now. My wife, my sons, my living, my business, and everything's here. And I'm in this country. I wish I was from birth. And I said to the judge, yes, I'm going to fight against Greece. And he shook hands. And now I'm American citizen. That's all.
I hope you're enjoying this. My father's voice. I know I am. My brothers are. This is his story, the Palikati Project. Produced by Jeff Carlin, my good friend and co-host here at the Chicago Way Podcast. And thanks to my wife, Betty, because if it weren't for her, we wouldn't have a Palikati Project. She's the one who convinced him to, for the first time in his life, sit down and talk about these stories. He never wanted to talk about this. He wasn't a chatty Cathy guy. Not like this. And coming up in the last edition, final edition of the Palikati Project, you'll hear some other voices, like my wife, Betty. It was Betty who convinced my father to talk about his life, and he didn't want to do it. And it was Betty who was hauled before a tribunal of, I don't know, arts political tribunal to ask, they wanted to ask her what her politics were about. And you hear other stories too, of my father returning to the village after a lifetime here in this strange country called America. And you hear his voice, the sound of his voice, the joy in his voice. When he talks about the only other thing besides the United States of America that he truly loved, his family, us, his sons, his wife. So join us next time, won't you, for part 4 of the Palikati Project, part of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN+.